Arsenal win back possession, and it's broken nicely to Cazorla. 30 metres from goal, plays it to the edge of the area. Alexis Sanchez goes for goal and scores. That's a brilliant goal from Alexis Sanchez. He's been Arsenal's star man this season, and maybe now they're going to get the vibe.
Guys, hi everyone, and thanks for joining us for podcast number 2. We're really excited to be back. We sent this out to about 40 to 70-ish people, and we got some great feedback and really appreciate the feedback, the support. I think a total of like 8 people listened to it, so we really appreciate those 8 people. I think we had someone as far as Iraq listen to the podcast, which was awesome. So again, thank you very much for getting in touch with us and listening again.
Wait, what's this podcast called?
So today, Drew.
Hello.
So today, I'm joined by fellow Potter Mike, and we've got Drew, who's a fellow Gooner and our actual fearless leader here in the Denver area. So how's it going, Mike?
I'm doing all right. This weekend a little happier than last one.
Great. And Drew, how are you?
3 points, can't complain, right?
Awesome, awesome. No, you can't complain. What a great weekend.
Yeah.
What a great weekend. This is unique because even though it's only our second podcast, Drew is in the same room as me, and we've got Mike and DC.
Yeah.
And so I guess...
Technology
is where it's at. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to start off today with our question of the week, and then we're going to wrap it back into who Drew is, where Drew's from, his ambitions from when he was a child to where he is now. And we're really going to grade out his life and see where it took the positive and negative turns. But let's start off with today's question. Who from the world of football would you like or dislike to find out is your real father? And I'm going to send this over to Drew first.
Well, it's an interesting question, and this is going to make for great radio, but... last time I was in Kansas City with some of the boys from the KC Gooners out there, we took a photo together, and the 4 of us were from LA, Boston, Kansas City, and Denver. And I posted it to Reddit, which was sometimes a bad idea, but this time was really good because I learned that I am Wenger's long-lost son as a result of this photo. I'm going to send it to you guys right now. Again, great radio.
And we'll post it on our Facebook and Twitter page, where you can also connect with us. But you'll see this picture, so you'll have to hit up one of our social media pages.
So I would say, question is, who's my...
Who would... If you had to find out who your father was, so your parents sit you down and say, Drew, you were adopted, and then there's 2 doors, one that you walk through and leave, or one where someone walks in and introduces themselves... And holy shit, you do look like Wenger in that photo.
It's long lost son.
So just based off of pure picture DNA, that is who you'd like as your...
Well, yeah, definitely. Who wouldn't want to grow up underneath the professor? But yeah.
You know he'd never sell you.
You know he'd never sell you, and you'd get a great inheritance when he leaves this earth.
Get the $200 million.
And you know he's not spending any of that money.
And I would buy that money. I would spend. I would buy Vardy for you.
Thank
Mike,
you.
Mike, who do you like? Anyone you want?
Vardy's wife.
You got it.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm fine.
No, Drew, that is an uncanny photo of you. And we will have... Oh, my goodness. I just zoomed in. This is absolutely nuts. Mike, we need to post this on social media.
We will get it. And if you want to find it on our Facebook page, go to www.facebook.com/, not /, like everybody says, Gooners in USA. So that is the Facebook page where you can connect with us.
Yeah, excellent. So Mike, throwing it over to you, answer the question now.
Well, I have a father, and God rest his soul. I don't think I'd want to find out that any football-related person was. So I actually took the different tack on this and said who I would least like to find out was my father. And I don't think there's any question in my mind that would have to be Gazza. Paul Gascoigne, to find out and walk through that door and see him on the other side of it, a shutter. I mean, this guy has made some of the worst decisions a guy could make. And after that, he retired and then started drinking. So, I mean, being a Spur, him and Gary Lineker were really the face of Tottenham when I first started following English football and was living over there. And I think I'd be pretty embarrassed to have him as a dad. I mean, drinking, exposing himself in public, but playing for Spurs is probably the worst thing that he did. But I do hope that he gets some help. It's not too late.
Yeah, it's tough seeing what he's going through. But, yeah, let's hope he does get some help. And so for my answer is, you know, I like everyone in this room, I too have a father who I love dearly. You know, when I graduated from college, my dad like shook my hand. And he said, "This is probably one of my most proud moments." And then he said, "And then I saw you walking across the stage, and I remembered you were an Arsenal fan." And then he just like gave me a hug, and I thought, "Oh, that's a real nice dad." No, but for me, you know what? I want Vinny Jones to be my dad, because imagine all the shit you could get into with him at your side. I mean, like the amount of stuff you could do that he would just be like, instead of like when you're a kid, he would just be like, "High five, dude! That's awesome." You know, and if you go out and you're like on the booze, he would just be next to you, ready to fucking rock and roll. And so that's why I would choose.
By the way, have you met my dad?
Yeah. Like, you want to start something? Hold on a second. Here's Pops. And then, you know, headbutts around. So I actually heard a story that when he played for Wimbledon, he used to go to nightclubs in the neck of the woods and just slide tackle people on the dance floor.
I do not know.
Unbelievable. So, yeah. So I would pick Vinny Jones. And I feel like, man, that would just be a riot. So, yeah. So thanks for answering the question of the day, boys. Let's find out more about Drew. I want to hear his life story, his ambitions, his secrets. Tell us your last diary journal entry. Go.
Well, I'm really surprised you guys asked me to be here today, because I'm boring. I have like no insight whatsoever. I can only assume you guys asked me here to talk about myself, which I'd love to do. So I would happily talk about myself.
And before Drew starts, when he says he has no insight, this SOB walks over to our table on Saturday at the pub and says, "Who's got first goal scorer?" We tell him who we've got. He yells Cazorla, walks away, and then comes back about 10 minutes later to cat, what, $20?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
his first goal in 40 Premier League matches, by the way.
Is it? Wow.
Well, he had all season.
That's true.
Off, yeah.
That's true.
He was due.
So tell us about yourself, Drew.
Well, just a small town boy, born and raised in Denver. No, one of the locals here in Denver. We have a great city here, and I'm learning every day that there's a lot of people who want to be here, so I'm happy to be a native. We've got a lot of people moving in, and there's fewer and fewer natives here in Denver.
How did you become an Arsenal fan?
Oh, so this is a romantic story, the story of me becoming an Arsenal fan, in a non-sexual kind of way, and I'll tell it to you.
Damn it.
One of my dear...
We just lost 7 of our 8 listeners.
Yeah, sorry. Well, we can make it steamy if
we need to keep it sexual, Drew.
Yeah, all right. Well, you'll have to help me fill in the gaps, but a dear friend and mentor of mine who I met in college. I guess I should give you his story first because it would make a lot more sense. We grew up here in Denver together, and one thing to point out to the out-of-state listeners is we have the same owner as Arsenal. Stan Kroenke owns Arsenal. He owns the Colorado Rapids. He owns the Denver Nuggets. He owns the
Avalanche,
the Mammoth, and now the LA Rams. Yeah. That was weird. We watched that game last night. That was weird. So we go to the Rapids games growing up, and there'd be a big Arsenal crest on the wall, and they'd fire the cannon after every goal, and it was kind of cool. So my dear friend Ryan, he became an Arsenal fan as a result. I was kind of a dickhead growing up. I had no inspiration, no ambition, and he was a real driving force in my life. So I met him in college, and we became roommates after that. And some nights I would come home 4 or 5 in the morning and he'd be off to an Arsenal game. He's like, you want to keep going? Like, okay, great, let's go. And so we'd go watch the early Arsenal game. The earliest one I ever remember was the 8-2.
Oh, boy.
Man United. And somehow I still became a fan after that. So my dear friend, he went to all the matches. He brought me along a few times, but it wasn't until he moved away. He moved to Houston for work that I started becoming an Arsenal fan, because in the mornings I would go down and sit alone at the bar and text him throughout the entire thing, and it was a good way for us to keep in touch, and started watching some more games, and then I became a fanatic after that.
So how did you end this? So you lead the Denver Gooners. Would you say you're the chapter president, the CEO?
The branch leader.
The branch leader.
It's what it says on my resume.
The czar.
Is this an elected position, or did you just kind of appoint yourself? Is this a dictatorship?
I was definitely a tyrant.
Tyrant.
It was tyranny, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tyrant Gibbs, his brother.
There's a ton of Arsenal fans in Denver, and they all kind of went there, but there's no organization. And
right.
So, there's one thing to know about me is I'm obsessive. And when I get into something, I dig in deep and I learn everything there is to know about it. And I try to encompass it throughout my entire life. So I wanted to become closer to it. So I started the Denver Gooners.
So for people listening, how do you start a chapter or the association? I mean, you reach out to the club, you reach out to Arsenal America. Like, what was your process in starting?
I was a bit fortunate because there was no official supporters group already here in Denver. A lot of cities have that. I think Arsenal America have 112 branches now, maybe more. It's growing. And there are some restrictions on how close you can be to another branch, but we are fortunate enough that there was not an official one in Denver. And so the organization that oversees all the Arsenal supporters here in the U.S. is called Arsenal America. They have a direct relationship with the club. The branches, through that relationship, have a relationship with the club, but not directly. There are some exceptions, like New York City has a direct relationship with the club and not with Arsenal America, but the majority of the supporters groups here in the States are affiliated with Arsenal America. They have a great organization there. You reach out to them and say you want to start a chapter, and they take it from there.
Nice.
It's pretty straightforward after that.
Nice. So we go to a pub in Denver called the Three Lions, and it's on a pretty cool street, Colfax, which I learned is the longest road in America that's not a highway. And you should just look up Colfax in Denver, because you're going to see some pretty crazy stuff. But there's a lot of supporters clubs around there. Like, I know Chelsea have one down the street.
Yeah.
British Bulldog. And so the Three Lions is a really cool place. And so I would say the opening match against Liverpool, we probably had like a couple hundred people there.
Yeah.
And then
FA Cup, we have capacity, which is 400 people.
And then this week, we probably had a little bit less, probably like what?
The 8 a.m. kickoffs are hard, and lower club like Watford is hard, even though they're above us in the table.
Yeah, which they had one supporter there.
Yep.
So, Mike, where do you watch your matches?
Kind of a mixture. My home pub is the Ireland's Four Courts in Arlington, Virginia. I live in the D.C. area. Obviously, it's a huge metropolitan area, and at this point, we're supporting two pubs for people kind of in D.C. and Maryland and the suburbs who like to go into D.C. They have the Lucky Bar at the D.C. Armory. We have kind of a satellite version of the D.C. Armory called Arlington Gooners, and we meet at the Four Courts. I've been going there. My first game there was actually the second FA Cup win, so that worked like a charm, and I've been going back there ever since. So,
nice.
Want to shout out to Travis. Travis is the head of Arlington Gooners. He's done a good job getting people there. And Ginger, Trish, Nick, there were about 20 to 25. It's not a huge crowd, but it's a growing one. And
nice.
And we do share the bar with a couple other adorable, cute little supporter clubs, like the little Chelsea gathering that was there this week, but it makes for some good banter.
Yeah. Well, Speaking of the match, let's go straight to it. So, you know, this was a unique one because we all woke up Saturday morning, for us anyway in the U.S., kind of already high on the two new signings that we had heard rumors of and then BBC confirmed. And now, you know, obviously post-match, Wenger saying that they were both pretty much done. And then I know Mustafi gave his first interview today as an Arsenal player. But let's go to the match. So we wake up desperate for 3 points. Mike, I'll hand it over to you. So walk us through, like, so weirdly, okay, Sanchez gets fouled in the box, but they continue play, which it looked like the referee was going to continue Wofford's play, and then it's a head injury, so they bring it back. It doesn't look like it's a penalty. Then all of a sudden, Santi Cazorla's got the ball in his hand ready to take the penalty. So did I miss something? Like, I don't know. What the hell happened?
It was bizarre. We were very confused watching it. We, you know, obviously our first thought was concern for Alexis, you know, the second we saw the replay, somebody shouts out, you know, why isn't that a penalty? And the rest of us are like, yeah, you know, because we were just you'd expect to see the ref showing the spot or pointing to the spot at that point. So, of course, we're all confused about what's going on. Finally, we get the sense that it's a penalty, and we let out a huge cheer. Of course, 30 seconds after that cheer, Chelsea scores down the bar, and we have to listen to the, you know, the five or six cute little Chelsea fans happy about that.
There'll be City fans by the end of the season.
And then the discussion begins about, is Theo going to take it or not?
Jeez. So Santi Cazorla steps up, and in my opinion, takes a terrible penalty down the middle, but has speed on it. Obviously, he had some composure. But so we're up 1-0, which is absolutely, absolutely great. But what a really unique circumstance leading up to that goal. I just, like, I don't know if maybe the assistant called over to him and said, hey, I saw something you didn't or what. But, I mean, who gives a shit? We're up 1-0.
It was a little tough in the moment to find out exactly what happened, but I went back and rewatched it. I mean, first off, you could see he knew exactly what he was doing. He ran away afterwards. He knew he has done wrong. He went in with the forearm right on the side of his head, you know, and he knew what he was doing. And the referee blew right away. And when I watched it a second time, he didn't make the call until a good 40 seconds later. But I appreciate when a referee takes their time to think about the call and make the right decision. And in that case, he did. I thought, watching it live, that it was a bit strange, like you said, but watching the replay, it looked like it was a little more coherent, at least.
No, absolutely. So then we go from Cazorla's goal to Alexis's goal, and I mean, beautiful set of play. You know, we were joking about Theo making that cross. I believe he got the assist on it. But one thing that I pointed out is, do we not have goal line technology anymore? Because they didn't have the little feature on the TV showing it going in, even though clearly it did and the assistant saw it go over. But do we not have goal line technology?
We do. I think it was too clear.
Too clear?
Yeah.
They did go about a minute or two after. They did go to that view. They didn't do the you know, the line across and the views where you see like 360 degree angle. But I think that was because it was clearly like 2 to 3 feet over the line.
I still want to see the angles, man. I want to see the shadow.
The shadow didn't make an appearance, and that's never good.
Honestly, the machine didn't even catch it. It was so far into the goal.
A few thoughts on that goal. First of all, Theo. I mean, what a cross that was! I don't know who he thinks he is all of a sudden, but that was a fantastic cross.
Right where he needed to be.
Yep.
A foot closer, it was the defenders. A foot further, it was the goalkeepers.
Exactly. He threaded it right through. And that will be, mark my words, the least manly goal that Alexis will ever score. I mean, the speed of it crossing the line was maybe one mile an hour. The only way that could have been less manly would have been if it went in off of his vagina. I mean, it was a huge goal, though. I mean, the goal, not the vagina. But
no,
it's
totally
huge.
And there goes, again, the credit to Theo, because he puts it in at such pace that, you know, obviously that momentum, then hitting Sanchez and then going in. If Theo would have hit that lighter or he would have lofted it, it wouldn't have gone into the back of the net. So,
and I actually think if Alexis had struck that more squarely, it might have been saved by the keeper. I think he just got enough of it, and it went off up in the air like it did. And you know, a goal's a goal, and that was a huge one because we needed a little bit of breathing room at that moment.
Mike, there are some people who will challenge you on that and say that's exactly what he intended to do with that ball. And I've seen a few goals that he's scored in the past where he kind of just bops it up and dribbles it over the line like that.
Well,
you don't think so?
I'll take it.
You know what? I always say to the girls I coach, whenever they score a goal that looks like a cross, I always go, hey, was that a cross or a goal? And they always smile and go, oh, no, it was a shot. And I always encourage them. I say, yeah, if it goes in the back of the net, you always intended to do that. So Mike, that was what he wanted to do. He had that planned out in his mind as the ball was in the air. And you can't take that away from him.
Oh, and trust me, I do not want to. He can score off of his vagina 25 times this season for all I'm concerned.
So moving from his vagina to Ozil's beautiful header, for me, it was, you know, the fact that it was an absolute Giroud bullet. The lead up to that goal was just phenomenal. I mean, did anyone count how many touches before Ozil connected?
No, I was watching Ozil the entire time, which I have a lot to say about.
But... Well, go there, Giroud, go there.
No.
Don't hold back.
He's criticized often for being a lazy player. And it was his, quote, laziness that scored that goal. He has a way of drifting into space. And I saw a defender check him two times. Like, he's not going to run. Yeah, he's not going to run. But he just slowly gets there. He was walking. He jogged. He was dashing. He darted. He scored. Like, that was exemplified how he just drifts in behind those defenders. Or anyone who's marking in, he just waits for them to move and... Theo had a great run on that pulled two defenders mm-hmm. as well, but his awareness to float into that area, what a lot of people call laziness, is what scored that goal.
Oh,
and honestly, we benefited a bit from Watford waiting for halftime. They're a bit flat-footed, but he still moved really well and found the space.
Completely agree. He gets so much shit in the press for being a lazy player, for not living up to expectations. I mean, he walks away from the Euros, voted Germany's best player, but people say that it was a shitty Euro for him.
Played out of position.
World Cup, same thing. He walks away as their player of the tournament, I think. And again, everyone's giving him crap in the press for not living up to it.
He's making a living.
And it's just like, for those who are Ozil haters, and obviously no one listening to the seven people who listen to this podcast won't be, but if you just watch him, it's almost like he knows where the play is going before it goes there. And if it doesn't, he's covering space already. So I completely agree. Mike, what were your thoughts on the goal? Tell us.
I think that last season he did a lot to get rid of that label of being a lazy player. I mean, if there are any people left over who think he's just not good enough or doesn't try hard enough, they're just flat out wrong. I could see people saying that at the beginning of last season, but last season just got rid of that for me. But I talked last week about an understanding between players, using Mahrez and Vardy as an example. The understanding between Alexis and Ozil on that play, and note that Alexis was out wide. He wasn't leading the line at that particular moment, even though he may have been started in the nine position. He's out wide. Ozil's trailing the play a little bit. And the understanding between the two of them, that centering pass was meant for Ozil's head, and he knew it, and he punished it into the goal. And that is what we're going to get if we can keep these guys playing together in the positions they prefer to be played in. That goal was a special one. It made me feel a little tingly.
Right before halftime, too, we weren't scoring those goals last season. We didn't have the desire. Many teams will pass that around, wait for the whistle to blow, but we wanted a third goal.
We were giving those goals up as recently as a week ago. Now, you know, to get one before halftime was massive.
Yeah.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. So I want to go over to Xhaka, who, you know, I thought in the first game when he came on, he looked lost. And, you know, they always say the speed of the Premier League is something for players to just get used to, but this match I thought he was exceptional. I thought his ability to close down play. Some of his passes were just absolutely just beautiful. I mean, you know, you look at Pogba, who essentially is a central defensive mid, right? That's how he was brought up through the youth systems. And so 100 million for him. We dish out, what, 35 for Xhaka? And I'm not going to compare the two of them, but tell me your thoughts on Xhaka's overall gameplay, because I thought he was absolutely outstanding in this match. Mike?
Well, I am going to compare them, and I think in a year we'll it's going to be pretty silly that Pogba was three times the cost. I think Xhaka looked tremendously better than he did in the first game. And I'll excuse that first game from him. I mean, he did make a pretty horrible back pass in that first game, but those things are going to happen. He looked like he's got command. We got to figure out who's going to play next to him on a regular basis, if we can, because he's got to be starting virtually every game. He's a future captain of the team as far as I'm concerned.
Totally. Now, okay, here's a question. Walter Mazzari says after the match, when Sanchez, Ozil, and Xhaka click, a lot of people who love football will be having orgasms. Did he really say that?
No, that was debunked. That was not a real quote, although I'm going to treat it as though it was. And in fact, I'd like to give a shout out to Becca from Iowa, who posted on Facebook an Arsenal themed tissue box and dedicated it to me to take care of that orgasm that we're going to be having a lot of. But no, he did not actually say that.
No, okay. So, but even though it's still a great quote, but one thing he did say, and I often feel like this goes unlooked, is he said, "Czech played incredible for them, saved a goal or two, or maybe three times, but I'm very happy with how our team played." And so, yeah, Czech does often get overlooked. And so, you know, we'll hit this in a minute, but there was probably a 20 to 30 minute period after they scored their goal where we were just on the ropes. I mean, it looked like they could easily have stolen the game. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know, I think we brought on Jack and Mo. Yeah. And then all of a sudden it kind of shifted back into our wheelhouse and we held possession. But were you guys nervous after they scored a goal? Were you thinking like, shit, here it comes?
Absolutely. Well, that just tells you how important that third goal was. If we didn't have that goal before halftime, Ozil's header, we'd be in a very different place at that moment. But 3-1 is manageable. Mm-hmm. And I thought if we were 2-1, then it would have been, they could have punished us easy. But they looked more likely to score. I think Koscielny really makes the squad something special when he's back in there. So I was never worried that we'd concede another two to tie, but maybe one.
Yeah.
When we do have that level on the bench, that Jack to come in the game, the Elneny to come in the game, or Coquelin, if he had come in, I mean, that we can hold and defend leads a lot better than we have in the past. I think Wenger loves bringing in guys like Gibbs and Elneny as substitutes, because you can do that when you're up a goal or up two goals and play not defensively, but play smarter. You know, before when you have a different level of player, different level of experience coming off the bench late in the game, it's just not the same feeling. So I like the depth that we have in these positions. You may say we have too many center of the same kind of center midfielders, but we need that to close down games like the one last Saturday.
Something Absolutely. That just occurred to me. Can we talk about something that just occurred to me?
You know what? Bring it up. Let's discuss.
We're about three deep in defensive mid now. Xhaka seems, well, judging by this weekend, Xhaka seems to be the preferred. Elneny seems to be second. And then now we have Coquelin as third in the pecking order, which we all hailed Coquelin's name last season for being one of the best defensive mids in the league, up until he earned that red card against Tottenham. Has that changed?
You know, we talked about this last week on the pod, and I made the comment that I don't think he gets into the starting 11 when everyone else is healthy. But it's interesting because he had that. I mean, he's such a good player. But, you know, we think Xhaka versus Pogba. I mean, Elneny was, what, for $5 million. And I think that Xhaka and Elneny, putting those two deep, are just going to be absolutely incredible. And we wanted for so long that depth at central defensive mid, and now we've got
Song left, you know.
And now we've got three players where it's like any of them that start, I feel comfortable.
And I think really it'll depend a lot on the opponent and the stakes. I mean, it depends. You know, League Cup, we won't have to play guys from the youth team, but I mean, you can play two really strong defenders like Kalkalan and Xhaka if you're playing a team that has a lot of speed in the midfield. You know, I think when we play the Man United, when we play Man City, you may see a different choice of those two players than you would if we're playing Watford or Crystal Palace or Sunderland. And it's a luxury that's nice to have, especially when it gets to be the 65th, 70th minute of the game and you can see how it's going.
You've already seen that this season,
yeah.
In fact. Mm-hmm. Liverpool, he played Elneny and Coughlin in the 11, you know, so there's
exactly.
Room for that. Santi takes the bench in that formation, but when you have an attacking-minded team to play, you can play two of those because Elneny will still get forward and he'll still take those shots. And yeah.
And Xhaka will do the same.
Yeah.
one thing that I really thought was impressive is after the match, Wenger's press conference, he said Ozil is not physically there completely, but what we want from Ozil is assists and goals, and I hope he can get that this season. And then kind of threw out the gauntlet, saying I want 10 or 15 goals plus the chances he creates. And if I'm Ozil and I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, damn, I need to shoot more, but, you know, I'm probably one of the worst people when it comes to questioning Wenger, but the fact that he is actually stepping up and saying to Ozil in the press, you need to score more, you know? And so what do you guys think about that? I mean, should we be seeing more goals from him? Should we be seeing chances created, Mike?
You know, we saw a goal from him on Saturday. I do want to see him shoot more. It does seem like he's passed first a lot of the time. But you know, he's a playmaker. He's a number 10. That's where he excels. I think Ozil kind of knows at this point what he should be doing. I'm not saying he doesn't need to be coached, but I don't think he needs to change his game at all right now.
Yeah.
I think he's got it figured.
The goal he scored seemed more like a flick on than a shot, didn't it?
It did, a little bit.
Pass
little
into
bit.
The net a little a bit? Yeah.
Well, all I needed to do.
Do you boys have anything else to mention about the match?
Man, I had that was the first time this season I've had fun watching an Arsenal match.
Yeah, for sure.
The second match. Third match.
Third
match.
Yeah.
But that's amazing. When we win, it's much more fun. You know, it seemed to me like there was really something too. And again, something I read on Facebook from John Handel posted that the team looked physically and emotionally like they were lifted by the news, which is still not yet official, that we had two signings coming in. And that could be a complete you know, misconception, but it just looked like they knew, okay, now our season's picking up. We got good news coming in. We're playing a winnable game. And, I mean, they looked up for it where they didn't really look up for it in the first couple games. And you could say, you know, here we go, times are about to get better, or you could look at it with the glass half empty and say, why, you know, why didn't they have that feeling a month ago by knowing reinforcements were coming in? But I do think that there's something to the fact that news that was breaking on Friday and Saturday morning really helped lift the team.
No, and I agree. And so, like, transitioning away from the match, you know, one thing that Wenger has never done in the past, or at least I can't remember, is before it's announced on the website, he comes out in the post-conference and saying, we've bought two players, Mustafi and Perez. They'll integrate into the team now, and we'll help them join the squad. We've worked very hard to get the signings done, and we've not got any plans for anyone else. So the fact that he came out after the match, when we're already buzzing, you know, when Oracle comes out and says on BBC, this is who they're signing, it's done business, you know he's fed stuff from the Arsenal PR team. But
did you call him the Ornacle?
Well, I call him the Oracle, but he is known as the Ornacle.
Ornacle.
And when the other coach comes out and says that the player has been sold, that's usually a good sign as well.
Yeah.
And so, like, we're going to do a transfer deadline podcast. I don't know how entertaining it's going to be for people, but we've got some pretty.
It's
going to
be amazingly entertaining.
Yeah, we've got sellers. We're not going to just cover the Arsenal people. We're going to cover pretty much the entire window. We're going to have some fun with it. But I will say that for all the people out there who are getting super nervous about Ozil not signing a new contract and is he happy at Arsenal, I mean, today Mustafi gave his first interview and he said, you know, Per I didn't talk to too much because I haven't seen him for so long, but Ozil and I had a lot of conversation about coming to the club. And I don't have the quote in front of me, but he basically says, I talked to him, he told me how great it is, and that we should be joining. And so whether or not he's signed a new contract yet, Ozil, I think the fact that he's going to bat and saying this is where you need to be is huge, bringing in a World Cup winning defender. And then Perez, we talked a little bit about. Is it Perez or Perez?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah? Okay.
Either one. Cool. You choose.
So Lucas. So Lucas. We talked a little bit about it in podcast one, but we talked about, you know, essentially he is the Spanish Jamie Vardy. He is looking to for those through balls, those counterattacks. And for a lot of people, obviously, there a handful of people who listened to this saw me and Drew get into it in June when I was so pumped that Vardy was signing and Drew was not so pumped. So I asked him at the pub when I was giving him his first goal money. I said, hey, what are your thoughts? I mean, dude's coming in and he's supposed to be the Spanish Vardy, and tell him what you told me. I mean,
well, I wasn't too stoked on Vardy. I think that guy's kind of a, can I say, petulant cunt? Is that all right?
Yeah, the first C-bomb! The first C-bomb!
He's a bit, yeah. I hate that guy. But now that we see a similar player in Perez coming to the squad, it tells me that Wenger has direction for this club. He's I don't know if this means that we're changing our style of play, but he's actively been seeking strikers that fit this mold, really. This counterattack, fast, can play off of the ball and over the shoulder of defenders and things. And this is telling to me because we've never played that game before. Well, sorry, under Wenger, we've never played that game before. We are 1-0 to the Arsenal, after all, and we have played counterattacking football in the past. But the way that we've sought out these two players who play a very similar game tells me there's something, there's a direction change coming.
And we're not in any means saying that we know this Lucas guy and we know exactly how he plays, but a pretty thoughtful article was written by a pretty diehard Deportivo fan, and he basically summed it up with, this is essentially a Jamie Vardy-esque type of player, and thought that he would fit into Arsenal's system and structure really well. Mike, do you have any thoughts on the two signings? Or
I love the Mustafi signing, obviously. I mean, I have heard him referred to by someone who apparently watches a lot of Bundesliga football as being the German Squalachi, which is not specifically a very good comment, but we'll see whether he's right or not. I've only heard that from one person.
Yeah, I remember seeing the same comments from that gentleman whose name I don't remember. But
that would be Tom from Richmond.
Yeah, so Tom from Richmond. But no, someone did pull up a Squawker statistic or Opta Joe of him versus Daly, the guy that Manchester United just spent like $40 million on, and based off of the six stats of defender versus defender, Xhaka won every stat. And so it would just be interesting to see how well he plays. And you know what? When Per gets back, when Gabriel gets back, we've got – and I'm going to put Rob Holding in there because I've been super impressed with him. We've got five solid center backs who can compete with each other and push each other for a starting spot. And we've been desperate for that as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that we've got competition, which is great. And we've always said depth is the reason we don't go far. And now we've got it.
I love the signing. And then Perez, I have two questions. First, is there any truth to the rumor that that transfer almost fell apart because Wenger tried to use Bitcoin?
How can you know, Mike? How can you know? If you believe it, you believe it, man.
Something about two installments or try to use Bitcoin or some weird shady thing like that. But
there's
I'm glad that we got
him. And but you can believe it if that makes you feel good.
The fact that you even think that Wenger knows what Bitcoin is.
He's like 70 years old,
yeah.
Right?
Dude, he knows, deals in baguettes and croissants.
He knows what little Bitcoin is.
Oh,
yeah.
And the second is a more serious question. Does he get the 9? I think he's probably got to.
So here's what I think. Here's what I think, and I'm just going to throw this out there. I think Drew knows sometimes how negative I get about Arsenal, but
he's English after all.
I am. But I think it's going to be telling tomorrow morning when we wake up to see if that number 9 jersey is given to him. And I think it's twofold. If it is given to him, I think Wenger really sees potential. It sounds like we've been scouting this dude for 18 months longer. But I'm wondering if tomorrow morning we don't wake up, he doesn't have the number 9 shirt.
I'm planning on waking up tomorrow morning.
Are we dipping into the market for someone else? Because people keep going on about this madness. James Rodriguez's name keeps coming around. I for one, think that we're going to go after one more player, whether or not we get him. But I do think that there is a little kitty set aside because Wenger wants one particular player. I also wonder if they know who the next manager is, and they've said to this manager, hey, this is who we're going to go after. Because why drop $60 million on a player if that player is not going to be given time under the next manager, right? So I think the number 9, I'm probably thinking way too much into it, guys, but I see the number 9 jersey being held off for someone else.
I hope you're right, but I think he's going to get the 9, and I think Wenger's going to re-sign, and none of your points are going to actually make any sense. But
well, that's usually what happens in my life.
I want you to tell me again what we spoke about at the pub about Giroud and Griezmann working together.
We did. So we had that brief conversation of how the French national team lined up and how playing a player off of Giroud seemed to really up his game, and maybe Lucas is that player. And we talked about it on podcast one, where Lukaku goes to Chelsea, Costa goes to Atletico, and then Griezmann. But Griezmann's already said he's not leaving. He's staying. But I do feel like if we change our formation, we highlight Giroud, I think we're a better team.
We saw how successful it was in the Euro. We saw Giroud as the hold-up man and Griezmann running in behind him. And that could be done with Vardy. Didn't happen. Could be done with Perez. We'll see, you know. I thought that was very insightful. And I think that if we're using that partnership, Giroud is the best in the game at the hold-up play, back to the goal, dishing it off, little flicks. He's so good at that.
I've always been a fan of Giroud. I've never said Giroud is the problem. Only having Giroud, I feel like, has been the problem, because dude scores when he needs to. Yeah, he goes on droughts, but all strikers do, right? We've just never had someone to step up and play when he's in a drought and score those goals.
So could Perez be a second striker, or is he a backup? Like,
Where do you play him? Knowing Wenger, he's a backup until he gets comfortable knowing that he's in the squad, and then he comes on. But like you said, maybe he does come on at that in that role where he's the Griezmann for Arsenal, and he's dishing those balls off and waiting to receive those balls or following up on those. And man, I tell you what, the fact we're having a conversation about this just makes me happy because we've got options.
Well, Wenger has played Welbeck next to Giroud before.
Yeah.
That was okay.
And speaking of Welbeck, the rumor is that it's not an April return. It's more in line with Christmas.
Yeah.
And so one thing I said to Drew at the pub, I think it was Drew. I spoke to 4 people. So I said to him, you know, I don't expect Lucas to be our Henry because that's just outrageous, but I hope he's not our next Reyes.
Yeah.
Like that to me is, if we can find a happy medium there, you know, and my happy medium is 35 goals, 18 assists.
Yeah. Happy medium.
One season. So let's move on to the league. So Mike has a little topic he would like to discuss, and that's hairstyles. Mike?
You know, and I have absolutely no research. I've failed in my attempt to come up with specific examples, but, you know, every other player they're just stepping up their game. It's like there's a competition going on for the most absurd, expensive, extravagant haircut. And, you know, where is it going to stop? Are people going to start wearing pompadours and top hats during games? I mean, it's getting out of control. Last year it started the man buns. You know, those need to go.
They do need to go. And I don't think they will go until Andy Carroll says they're going to go. You know, I do.
Liverpool just was man bun central a couple weeks ago, and I'm seeing them more and more.
Yeah, they're absolutely ridiculous. I think that Ramsey's new haircut is also absolutely ridiculous, and it looks like Ozil got the poor man's Ramsey haircut.
It does, yeah.
It's like tattoos are going out of style, and now it's ridiculous haircuts.
And I will say that for as much as I dislike him because he's on United, but I do feel like Pogba puts a lot of effort into his haircut.
That zigzag? Fuck yeah.
I mean, he puts a lot of effort into that.
And now he has a lot more money to actually pursue his passion.
Oh, totally. But I always wonder, like, what happens when they cut the hair and they go, I fucked up. Like, does Pogba go just roll with it? Or is he like, shave it, we'll hit it again in a week?
There's no I fucked up. It becomes the new normal, the new cool. I think that half of these guys did fuck their hair up and have decided that they're just gonna make it cool.
Well,
that's what the new cool.
Let's Drew just sent over the picture of Ramsey's hair, and let's be honest, guys. Ramsey did the Eminem Beach Blonde before the Euros, which obviously made him play like a king. So I think he should bring that back.
But you never go full Nasri. You never go
full
Nasri.
So yeah, it was post Nasri, but then look at the trend. Messi does it after Ramsey.
Yeah, after his favorite player.
Lochte does it after Ramsey. I mean, it went global. It went global.
Yeah.
Now maybe this bullshit lines in the hair, like I don't even know what they're called.
Parts. Well,
it's
an odd place for a part, but it is a part.
Yeah, it's the Vanilla Ice haircut.
Yeah.
For those of you who haven't seen it, we'll also post this on our social media page. great listening, I know, but
great video.
So back to the league. So Manchester United, those sons of bitches, they do it again. You thought it was going to die when Fergie left. They score in the 92nd minute. Interesting data point statistic. We need like a jingle for statistics because we have so many of them. But Marcus Rashford's the first teenager to score a Premiership goal under Jose Mourinho.
Wow,
that's ridiculous.
Has it ever happened in La Liga or in Serie A?
That I don't know, but it's the first time. And think of all the years he's managed and all the matches. I mean, that's just outrageous.
He inherited Rashford. I mean, Rashford probably wouldn't even know his name if Mourinho was coaching them last year.
Oh no, not at all. So we see United squeak out 3 points again. I'm going to quickly throw out there. I thought Watford looked like a decent squad against us. They were unfortunate to lose against Chelsea, and you know they had the manager change. But I think that they're going to stay up. I think they'll survive. And I think if they play against us, or if they play against the smaller clubs like they did against us and Chelsea, they're going to get some points. They're going to be a team that I think can throw some losses into the Cities and Uniteds and maybe even us when they play us again. Who knows? But
I have to disagree. We looked really good because of their poor play in defense, especially. That ex-Tottenham fucker. Yeah.
I should have told you this before really the pod, Drew, but you never disagree with the host.
I'm sorry. I think they'll stay up. I agree with you there. But, God, they were so bad. They were so bad. We looked better as a result of their poor.
Why did they get rid of their manager again? I thought he did fantastically for them last year.
Oh, man. What? Mike, one of my favorite things this weekend was when the referee came over to the sidelines to speak to the manager, and the manager had to have his translator there to interpret what the referee was saying to him. How does he talk to his players? That's hilarious to me.
That's the greatest thing about world football. I love it.
They say it's a universal language, but not so much when you're getting yelled at. So we see United take maximum points again. City today absolutely destroyed West Ham. I mean, I don't know what the hell's going on at West Ham. Maybe it's the new stadium. Maybe they're tired from all the Europa League games they're playing. But they did not look like they belonged in this league. And I don't know if they played terribly or if City played well or if it was a mix. But my goodness, they did not look good.
It was a bit – they were a bit fortunate, City, to not have Aguero sent off.
Yeah, he's going to get a 3-match ban for sure. There's no way that that wasn't intentional. And for those of you who didn't see it, I mean, clearly elbowed Reed in the face. And you could tell just from his body language and his eye movement, he looked to do some damage.
He was frustrating. He was frustrated.
Hey, and how many Premier League games from now do we play in Manchester City?
Probably the fourth of out of
this is how it tends to work out.
But you know what though, what pisses me off, and it goes back to the kind of the press coverage, and if that was Costa or even Suarez, that would have been all over the media. But because it's squeaky clean goal scoring Aguero, you know, it gets no media coverage, and that's absolute bullshit. But the referees, I'm sure, will retroactively suspend him for 3 matches, which is great. But, you know, I say that, and they bring in Nolito, who looks like he's already hit the ground running. And then, can we just take a moment and laugh at the team that shares the North London district with us for drawing a match 1-1 based off of a cheat who – I didn't see the match. I don't mind watching any football game unless it involves Tottenham. I can't do it.
Yeah.
It cannot do it. But I heard that Firmino tripped himself and they got a penalty.
Oh, I don't know. Mike?
You know, I actually missed that one.
We're terrible.
Fuck those
guys.
So moving on.
I heard it, but I was actually taking a walk, if anyone could believe that. But
it did end 1-1. That's what we do.
I thought that Jansen's appeal for a penalty, like what I did see in the 33rd minute, was Jansen getting blocked off by one of the Liverpool defenders and just plop down on the ground for absolutely no reason and then get pissed that he didn't get a penalty of his own. But that was embarrassing. They're just embarrassing.
No, they are. You know, it's. They always say you shouldn't look at the league table until what you're 8 to 10 games in, and I said it on the last pod. Chelsea, United, City, they look good. They've had positive buzz because they're bringing in signings, but like Drew just said, you know, we're starting to see the same thing, or maybe Mike said it. There's a positive atmosphere now, and we've got our first 3 points, and the teams also have to play us, which hopefully we can nick some points off of them.
By the way, we don't play City until December. I was thinking of the Chelsea match, which is coming up sooner than that. But so we're going to have Aguero elbow somebody else in late November.
Yeah. So let's. So another big thing this week was Champions League draw.
Yeah.
And so looking at the table, we're in Group A. You know, I think my prediction was we were going to get Bayern or Barca, as we always do, but our group is PSG, FC Basel, and Ludogorets Razgrad.
The first Bulgarian team we'll face in 130 years.
Really? What was the first Bulgarian team in the 131st year we faced?
Well, I think we're only 130 years old, aren't we?
So why don't you just say it's the first team from Bulgaria we're going to play?
It is, yeah. Crazy.
No, that is crazy. That is crazy, and good for them for getting into the Champions League. But
it's a bit of a travel day for us. That way, one will be.
Totally is. But so let's quickly discuss our group. So Basel, so great for Xhaka and Elneny to go back to their one of their first clubs, and the Xhaka brothers get to play each other.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're one of those teams, man, where they can upset you. I mean, they can do some damage. Yeah. We've seen them do it against United's and Chelsea's, but that's not an easy team to play.
Yeah.
No, I think Basel had the of the teams in Pot 3, I think they had the highest coefficient, which obviously takes into account the last 3 or 4 years where a lot of their players, you know, are now playing for us or other teams. But, you know, Basel was not the team I wanted to pick out of that group. Frankly, I'm pretty happy with the other two. You know, we could have certainly done a lot worse than PSG, who just lost to Monaco today.
They did.
They may still win the league in France, but that's not saying much.
Well, now they're without Zlatan, it'll be a different story.
No, I mean, I think that
there was some other English teams who got some pretty favorable draws. We got a favorable draw. Leicester.
Even if we got Leicester's draw, we would have struggled for second place, let's be honest. It's our narrative. It's what we do every year.
You know, I'm going to go on record and saying that both Tottenham and Leicester don't make it out of their groups.
Tottenham,
even with the favorable draw.
Tottenham's got a tough group, man.
No.
They got to travel to Moscow.
Yeah.
Putin-led Moscow. I mean, come on, dude. That's tough. Bayer Leverkusen's not going to be an easy match.
It would be a disgrace if they didn't advance, and I don't think they are
and
going
Monaco
to.
And Monaco bested us last year.
Yes.
And we're by far better than Tottenham.
Yeah.
So I agree with you.
The
Tottenham's
transient
not
property
be,
is
yeah,
what you're...
yeah. No, there are some awesome groups, though.
Yeah.
There is some blinder of groups.
Well, it's the new seeding, right?
Yeah.
We predicted the new seeding would bring on some groups of death, and God, City has got them.
City, Celtic,
Brute, and
Mönchengladbach, and Barcelona.
Yeah.
We've done a little bit of good for them by taking off one of Mönchengladbach's top threats.
We have. Maybe he can just run on and score a worldie and then run off. Does that work? Can you play with us?
And this thing starts in 2 weeks. It's crazy how quick it pops up. But we got PSG on the 13th in Paris. Of course, the toughest of the six games is the first one. But
that's
going to be
massive. That, Mike?
Sorry?
Did you see the matches surrounding that fixture?
Yeah, Southampton and Hull. I think it's not one of those where we have in the past. I think this usually happens in
March,
in February with our round of 16.
Yeah, it's always like whoever's in first place, us playing Champions League, and then whoever's in second, third, fourth, fifth, we play them in a row.
Yeah, that's the rule. It just has to go that way.
No.
But we'll have a whole weekend without Premier League football next weekend to dig into this a little deeper, I think.
No, absolutely. And so, you know, like we mentioned, we do want to do a transfer deadline day podcast.
Live stream all the activity on the
31st. I don't know if we'll – yeah, sure, Drew. We'll live stream it.
Yeah, whatever.
Which ground are you going to stand outside with all those wacky people behind you?
I'm going to go wherever Harry Redknapp is.
Nice.
Do you remember seeing the video of, I think it was up at Newcastle, where dude's standing outside of the ground, and then a supporter runs up and just hits him in the face with a dildo?
No. Please send that to me. I would love to see it.
We'll put that on social media as well, but yeah. Dude's just like... wobbling a dildo and just hits the dude right in the face or something along those lines.
Yeah, we will put that definitely on social media and let's review our new social media outlets that anyone who would like to go to can. Andrew, you want me to do that?
Yeah, do it. I'm making some notes about all these things I need to post on social media.
Yes, we just promised to post things, but no one's actually keeping track of them, so
hey,
you may see like one out of every five.
Hey, the seven listeners, which have been whittled down to three, will go to our social media.
And that social media would include, on Facebook, you can search for Gooners in USA, or from any browser, just go to www.facebook.com/GoonersInUSA. We have a Twitter. We occasionally tweet and twat and do all that stuff and it's at Gooners in USA. So feel free to tweet us your suggestions, your comments, your questions. If you have to criticize us, I suppose that's okay. If you'd like to see anything addressed on the pod. And
send them questions and comments. Like, and so this is a great segue to this feature called The Lost and Found. Joey lost his Bellerin shirt.
He has.
I tried to do this with a straight face. Joey has lost his red Bellerin kit. He's not sure if he lost it in L.A. or Miami, but if you find it, please return it.
Or anywhere in between.
Yeah. So, you know, he's really beat up about that. He started a GoFundMe page to get a new one.
How will we know if it's his?
We'll know.
We'll know.
Black light, and we'll know.
Blacklight, and you know, this now is, I mean, it's going to pop up within 24 hours now because the word is officially out.
Oh, totally. And if I know Joey Murphy, like I think I know Joey Murphy, he writes property of Joey Murphy with his phone number. Yeah. All of his clothing.
Yeah. Sure does.
And lastly, if you if you're old fashioned and you prefer email, it's gooners@goonersinusa.com. We are taking over the Gooners in USA domain, so feel free to send us an email, and we may apparently look at that. And you know, we will weed through the 2 to 2.5 comments that we get on all of these social media platforms combined. And we may even respond to it. So,
you know, I feel like if we get 20 likes on Drew's Arsene Wenger lookalike photo, Mike should do the next podcast shirtless.
Oh yeah, no one will know though.
We'll know.
How about naked?
That's, oh, you'll know. You'll hear the flapping.
We'll hear the flapping.
I think that's a good place to finish this off, don't you?
Absolutely. Drew, thank you so much for coming on. You've been an absolute gem and delight.
Please have me back. I get to drink beer and talk.
He brought this watermelon Dorado beer. Delicious.
It's delightful, yeah.
Very refreshing on a summer eve.
There's still three more. I'm sure we're going to drink
that. We're going to pound those out. Mike, thanks a lot for taking your evening on the East Coast, and we'll talk to you soon, bud.
Cheers. Come on, you goons.